everyone doing this morning?
Fantastic.
Good.
Fantastic. Fantastic. Gloria has name tags. If you wish to have a name tag, she's going to walk.
Jody.
Gloria was. Yeah, sorry. She's got a name tag. Yeah, I don't know why I called you. I was just talking to Gloria. So, Jody has. has name tags if you would like it. We're going to get started. A couple of announcements before we get going. Hopefully you guys got the emails. So yes, it is true that we now, I just received back from the state of California, our filed articles of incorporation for Searchlight Ministries of Orange County Lutheran Church. So a nice long name. You can just call it Searchlight. That's what I do. And it's very, very exciting. So what that does officially mean is I know... Oh, I thought you were leaving that for me.
No.
I want you to see my wife just had a baby. It's very exciting. No, that is not her baby.
This is what a girl looks like.
I know. This is the Hatcher's new baby, so congratulations. They have been away from us for a couple weeks for good cause and good reason, so... We've been watching that closely, so. So we do have, because we have a bank account, I know that some of you have been wanting to write checks. Well, actually, all of you have, I've heard. And I want you to know right from the beginning, Searchlight is going to be a church that's focused all on money. So every week, we talk about it. If you don't know me by now, I'm quite sarcastic. No, you know how much I hate to talk about money. But I do know that a lot of you have been holding on to stuff for tax purposes. So if you wish to start donating the millions of dollars, we will totally accept those now. And all you have to do is make it out to Searchlight Ministries, and we'll be keeping track of that. So you can start today, tomorrow, whenever you wish to, and that'll be a great thing. But we're just excited that the articles have been filed. So according to the state of California, we are a legal entity ready to go. We do have people that have been volunteering for board of directors, and it's very exciting. So I'm going to keep, the slate open until Wednesday. What I'd like to do is next week, I would like to, either next week or the week following, have the board of directors in place so that we can have them stand before you and stuff like that. So if you believe that God is calling you to serve on the board of directors, all you have to do is either talk to me or send me an email. Again, to be on the board, biggest thing is you have to be a person of prayer. You have to be focused on the health and vitality of a congregation. And you have to think larger than what color is the carpet. You know, it's not those small-time things. Right off the bat, we're going to be the very first meeting that I convene will be about establishing the mission statement, the core values, long-term plans, strategy, facilities, stuff like that. So, again, it's very exciting. I'm excited to be able to meet with the people, and so far, a lot of you have stepped forward. I think I've got 10 people. So I may, that's if unless other people throw their name in. If we have 12 or less, I'm going to call the board good and just simply say that's the board. But yes, we do, we would love to have you on it if that is something that you feel God is calling you to do. 2 weeks from today, we are going to launch. September 7th, we are going to hold our first worship service. I just met with Brian and Dawn Inouye last night. Dawn will be leading worship for that first Sunday. We have not gotten a long-term plan strategy yet in place, but when that happens, that'll be great. But she is committed to coming to that first service on September 7th. So we're very excited about that. Again, you won't hear anything from me until September 1 publicly. When September 1 hits, then my Facebook page will light up. I'll be advertising all the live long day. September 1 is when our website will go live. Ray's walking around here.
He was here a minute ago.
Oh, he's taking a call. Well, he's a very important person. He's establishing the website, and it's very cool. So if you go to searchlightministries.com right now, it's still the old site, but starting September 1, it will be relaunched. We've got stickers for your cars. We're getting some other things. Yeah, it's really kind of cool. Well, that's thanks to the Stankuses who are helping us out with that. So we've got a lot of stuff happening. We're buying music equipment. It's definitely a crazy time right now, but we're very, very excited. So, market September 7th. Where are we meeting at on September 7th?
I don't know.
I have no idea either. That's a good question.
Wherever the cloud is.
We've got three locations that we are looking into, and we will be pursuing those even more heavily. One of them we've been knocking at furiously, and God hasn't opened the door yet, so we're thinking that may not work. But we're checking out a couple of places, but whatever it is will be really exciting. So share that with your friends. It's going to be a lot of fun. So any other questions about what's going to be happening in the next couple of weeks? Chances are next week we're going to be here again, and then we'll be launching somewhere. So, and here is actually one of the locations that we're looking into. So this could possibly be, and if you were with us previous, this is where we actually did worship before. We had the band set up over there, chairs faced that direction. Kids were upstairs and did their kids program. It was a lot of fun. So, yeah.
Have you actually kind of talk to him about that?
No, I haven't. I still have to negotiate a price for something like that. But yeah, that'd be something that I'm going to be talking to this week.
You say, yeah.
You guys want to get into Numbers 11? Sounds good. Let's go to Numbers 11 and dive into this. So while you're turning to Numbers 11, I'll open us up in prayer. Lord, the excitement is building, and we're thrilled to be a part of this this new thing, and I thank you for so many who have stepped forward, stepped up, who are doing so many things, and so many others who are just simply waiting for orders, and it's just really a wonderful time. During this time, Lord, can you draw us even closer to you so that we would not make a move, not make a decision, not take a step without first seeking your face and finding out your opinion on the matter. But thank you for the chance to gather. Thank you for air conditioning. I so greatly appreciate it, Lord. May we be able to learn and grow because of what you teach us today in Numbers chapter 11. In Jesus' name, amen. Is whining a sin? That is an honest answer. Did you hear that? She said, I hope not. Yeah, that's very honest. That's very good. The 11th commandment, thou shalt not whine, yes. Actually, in our household, we established the 11th commandment is don't be a gank. So, yeah, which is kind of about the same thing. So, yeah, so I'm sorry. Should we do we'll do a show of hands. How's that? Who here thinks that whining is a sin? Who here thinks that whining is not a sin? Who here has absolutely no idea and can't wait for me to give the answer? All right. This has been a very interesting thing because with Numbers chapter 11, we get to see the Israelites again. This is not their first rodeo in terms of these specific details. I was very shocked as I went back and reread the account of the Exodus. Again, we're not at the moment of the Exodus. At the time of the Exodus, they came out of Egypt. Remember, they went over to the Red Sea, the big party in the Red Sea, got on the other side. That was when they had their very first beach party. Miriam busts out a tambourine. They sing, they dance. It's a great time. And then they start their travels before they establish the tabernacle. And as they're traveling, do you remember what happens? There's a bunch of whiny people. They're like, I'm really tired of manna. And then the quail comes. So all these stories, it's very interesting because at first blush when you read this, you're like, is this repeat material? No. Well, it's repeat in that it's a second time happening, but it's not identical to the first. So, and it really does beg the question about whining, because I don't know about you, I really can't stand whiners, except if it's me, and then I hope that you will join me in the whining and commiserate with me. Whining is a very interesting thing. I have determined, in my expert theological opinion, that it depends. Like most sins, like most things, what the context is very important. Because we're going to see two groups, two entities that whine. First is going to be the Israelites, but then Moses jumps in on the whining. And what's really interesting is the response that God has to both of them. I think that we're probably missing a little bit of the story that's in Numbers 11 just simply because they can't write everything that's taken place. But you could probably infer what's happening just based upon God's reaction to the material. So they're now ready to leave. They've built the tabernacle. They've blown the trumpet. They've all gotten up. They've been moving and they've been following. And then just like any good road trip, right after you get on the road, the kids start whining. Are we there yet? He's on my side. He's touching. I'm not touching. He's touching. I'm not touching you. Oh my gosh. And then the great old thing of, well, he started it. And the classic line is, I don't care who started it. I'm going to finish it. Yeah. My kids have heard all the cliches. I have said them all. But that is exactly what happens here in Numbers 11. So the people complained. They whined about their hardships in the hearing of the Lord. And when he heard them, his anger was aroused. So in this particular instance, we know that whining is going to be a sin for the Israelite nation. And why do you think that this is a sin for the Israelite nation? What was that?
Unthankful.
Yeah, there's this air of unthankfulness. Alex?
They're not showing faith.
There's this level of not showing faith because what are they complaining about?
And because they've already done this.
Yeah, and they've already done this. That's the thing that just blows my mind.
They should have remembered, oh, we've been here, we've done that, God did this, oh.
Yeah, because, especially, I don't know about you, for me, whenever God teaches me a lesson, I learn it the first time, and I never whine ever again. Ever. Right, But yeah, but I think that's part of it, because I think we all have that with kids. They make a mistake, you try to teach them, and then they go out and do the same thing. Or you tell them something, and they whine, you explain it, and then the same thing happens, and they keep whining about it. Yeah, there's this level of ungratitude that kind of comes through with them. They're complaining about their hardship. So then fire came along, burned among them, and consumed some of the outskirts of the camp. And when the people cried out to Moses, he prayed to the Lord, and the fire died down. So we don't know exactly that particular instance, what they're whining about. They're going to whine again in just a little bit, so we can infer that it was probably, we're walking through the desert, we really don't want to be here. Again, right when they got liberated from the Exodus, the thing they whined about was that they were just hot, and they thought they were going to die. And they even made the statement to Moses, were there not enough graves in Egypt? You had to bring us out here in order for us to die. So again, this also might not be all of them. This could just be a couple of bad apples. We see this in this next thing. So that played verse 3, so the place was called Taberah because fire from the Lord came and burned among them. We don't have all the details on that specific instance, but it's great we have this next one because it gives us more information about whining. So the rabble with them began to crave other food. Who are the rabble? Teenagers, exactly. No, I'm just kidding. Michael?
The rabble is the people.
Yeah, and there was a group of people that came along with the Israelite nation. Does anyone remember that secondary group that came with the Israelites? The Egyptians. Yeah, when they started doing stuff, the Egyptians, a whole group of them decided to come along with the Israelite nation. And there were several times in that Exodus where it talks about they started causing a bunch of trouble and causing a bunch of problems. Now, I don't know if that's this specific rabble, but they start complaining about the food. And they started wailing. And they said, if only we had meat to eat. I'm with them. You're out in the desert. Now, remember, we'll be talking a little bit about manna here in a moment. It's in the next paragraph. But they start remembering back. And they start talking about, we remember the fish we ate in Egypt at no cost. Also the cucumbers. They're craving cucumbers. Are they weird or what? Like, I don't get that. And they start, what else did they crave? Melons? Leeks! There's a leek in the boat. They're craving onions. Like, is it really, I guess, that bad out there And that they start craving all of these other things, onions and garlic. But now we've lost our appetite because we never see anything except this manna. So let's establish what the manna is. Manna was like coriander seed and looked like resin. The people went around gathering it and then ground it into a handmill or crushed it into a mortar. That's how they would make manicotti.
Manna splits.
Manana splits, nice. Yeah, that was hard one to say. I didn't come up with that one. That's nice. All right. They cooked it in a pot or made it into cakes, and it tasted something like made with olive oil. When the dew settled on the camp at night, the manna also came down. We have the definitive chapter. You should write this in your notes. The definitive chapter on manna is Exodus chapter 16. And in that, it explains a bunch of things. Why don't we go ahead and do some testing of our brains, and let's talk a little bit about manna. What else do we know about manna?
You can't keep it.
You can't keep it. So God made a very specific thing. When you go out, you're going to gather in the morning, and then you eat it. And then the next morning, there'll be brand new manna for you to eat. And some of the people were like, oh, well, I'm a hoarder. And so they grabbed their freezers, and they started stashing it away. And when they woke up the next morning, the manna would be completely rotted out and really disgusting. And filled with maggots and stuff like that. So,
except.
What was that?
Except
on?
Saturday.
Except on Saturday. Saturday you were supposed to grab a double portion. Because, oh, I'm sorry, excuse me, sorry, yes. I went Sabbath day and I went straight to Sunday. My bad. You're right. Friday, you were supposed to gather double because on Saturday, you weren't supposed to work. So you were supposed to gather two portions. So, and there's this whole story about how some people gather a single portion on Friday, and then on Saturday they walk outside and they're like, ah, where'd it go? So God was teaching them some discipline in there. He was teaching them what we pray in the Lord's Prayer, which I don't think any of us have ever experienced, which is give us this day our daily bread. Like, and we don't ever think about that, right? Who here is afraid they're not going to eat? Josh, you're going to eat today. Good grief.
But he is still afraid.
Yeah, he's still afraid. He's still afraid. He's like, please. Like, if we ever want to punish Josh, we don't take away his toys or his iPad. We're like, you don't get dinner. And he just, that's it. He's done. Yeah. Yeah, for them, as you're walking through the desert, that would be a very terrifying activity. How are we going to eat because we don't have food that's going to sustain us in the desert for some, 1.8 to 3 million people walking through the desert. Yeah. What else do we know about manna?
It fulfills all of your requirements nutritionally.
Apparently it fulfills all your requirements nutritionally because we also find out from another place that this is actually food eaten by angels. I don't know what that means, but it probably tastes a lot like angel food cake is what I'm guessing. I've used that joke so many times, and you still groan at it. Yeah. And you still laugh at it, too. I thank you for that. That's great. We do know that it was very thin, and there's actually a place, this is no joke, I looked it up, I didn't write it down, I don't know why, but it says it would settle like dew, and it would look like frost, and it would be sweet, like a flake.
Like frosted flakes.
Exactly! Like frosted flakes. So, whenever you eat a bowl of frosted flakes, you're eating manna. How did manna get its name? Does anyone remember that? Hold on, Lynn. Give other people a chance. All right. Alex.
The Israelites, when they first saw it, they said, what is it?
Yeah. And the phrase in Hebrew, what is it, is manna. So they walked outside, and they see all the frosted flakes, and they're like, where's the milk? And, no, we don't. They go, manna, which means, what is this? And that's how it ended up with its name. Manna from heaven. So, and then, early on, after they started eating all these frosted flakes, they don't have milk, which, again, don't you hate that when that happens? I don't know how many times it happens in our house. You pour a bowl of cereal, and then you go to the fridge, and there's no milk.
Orange juice.
Someone told me orange juice on cereal. That's disgusting. That is terrible. I'm not for that. That's disgusting. Yes,
we know that you can cook it.
What was that?
We know that you can cook it.
Yes.
And bake cakes and stuff.
Yeah, you can make cakes from it. You can make other. I'm sure that there were some creative people among them that after they ate, the frosted flakes for breakfast and then lunch and then dinner, someone said, "Can we figure out what can we do with this stuff?" So this also might then provide the reasons why they started craving kind of spicy foods. I don't know about you, after you've eaten bland food for a while, you're like, I really need some But like my dad, like he's bland food all the time. It's really gross. It's like, Dad, put a little salt in there for heaven's sake. But yeah, you know, meatloaf with no seasoning and gravy and potatoes. That's what I grew up on. So these people were craving all of this stuff because all they were getting was manna. And they started reminiscing about how good it was in Egypt. So was their memory good? What were they while they were in Egypt?
Slaves.
So did they walk around and go, I think I'm going to just eat a melon right now. Oh, look, I'm going to have a leek. Oh, that really sounds bad. Did they actually walk around just eating whenever they wanted to? It's one of those strange things that whenever we're in bad situations, sometimes we don't remember how bad something is until... And then we just start complaining about it. And we wish that it was like the good old days. And we often hear those types of phrases, if we only had the good old days. Yeah, Lynn?
Men are particularly like this because we have selective memory.
We have selective memory. We have selective hearing. Yes. What was that, baby?
Yes.
My favorite phrase to you. Didn't hear you, babe. Sorry. Yeah, they did have selective memory. I mean, they were slaves. They were building bricks all day long. That's all they did. And then God comes in, provides for them, and then they turn around and start whining. So now, from God's point of view, you can kind of see why his anger is burning within him, because he rescued them. They're no longer getting beaten on a daily basis. They're no longer doing hard labor, 15, 16 hours in the sun, and then barely surviving. The Egyptians are killing them, especially the male children. So if you ended up having a child and he was a male, he was going to be dead. They would drown him in the Nile River. It was really, really bad. And now they're sitting there going, gosh, I really wish we could go back. Which leads me to also believe that maybe the rabble that we're talking about here was actually the Egyptians. Because the Egyptians might have had it maybe a little bit better. They might have said, wow, why did I give up that in order to come to this? So, God's anger is upset with them. Moses heard the people of every family wailing, each at the entrance to his tent. Oh, that's fabulous. So like he's walking around, you know, kind of shaking people's hands like a politician, and he goes to a person's house, and what are they doing? They're standing in the doorway. What's wrong with you? I want a melon. Okay. Goes to the next. People are just crying all over the place. After a while, do you think that maybe this would get on Moses' nerve?
Oh,
yeah. It would get on my nerves. It gets on my nerves when it happens. Isn't that right, boys? Isn't that right, boys? Yeah, selective hearing. That's my boy. Yeah. When you get provided for and then you complain about the provisions, that's a problem, right? We don't have that problem, though, right? No one here complains about their provisions. Absolutely not. None of us whine about our lot in life. None of us are upset that God has done whatever to us or we're in our situation. This is an important lesson because we often forget. We start comparing ourselves to maybe an idealized past or maybe a fantasy future. And it doesn't square with reality, and so we get upset, and the only person we really get upset at with is God. I mean, that's what whining is. Whining is just simply a complaint to God. Because no one else really cares, right? Like, when people come and whine to me, I just tune them out. Especially if they're my children. But if there are other people, too, I just quickly and say, I really don't, you know, you're just whining. You actually have a really, really good life. But who you're really complaining against is God. That's a dangerous thing. Again, I think that sometimes you can whine and God will remedy your situation. But there's also plenty of examples where you whine and he doesn't remedy the situation. He comes in and punishes. So they start complaining. They're all at the at each of their family tents. And here we read that the Lord became exceedingly angry. So he's not just torqued. He's not just annoyed. God is getting really upset at this. And Moses was troubled. It's kind of, as one commentator put it, it's like this is the mother and father Are you going to sit down and have a talk about their whiny little children? He asked the Lord, why have you brought this trouble on your servants? What's the equivalent nowadays? What are you going to do about your children, right? That's that would be the equivalent nowadays. Yeah, when they're really bad, they're Heather's children. And when they're really good, they're my children. That's what's happening here. Moses is like, why did you bring this trouble on your servants? What have I done to displease you that you put the burden of all these people on me? We actually start hearing a deeper complaint from Moses that I think he really needed to get something off his chest. And the complaining about the people was just really the thing that put it over the top for him. He has a big problem because he's trying to carry the burden of the people by himself. Is it possible for one man who is not formerly God to carry the burden of a million people? No. Can't do it. Can one man carry the burden of 100 people?
No.
So, this has great application for us as things get ready to get started on my end of what is going to happen with me. Can I carry all your burdens? Let me tell you. I love hearing your burdens. And many of you sent in prayer requests, and I've been praying for them. And I also know something else, that one of the mistakes that I've made in the past is that I would make connections with people, but I can't sustain all those connections to the level that they need to be sustained. And that's one of the reasons why I think some people felt disconnected in a body, is because they didn't have kind of access to me, or they didn't feel a connection with me. And I'm just going to tell you right from the get-go, I love all of you, but I cannot be all of your friends. I would love to. I'm definitely friends with some of you. I know all of you. I will pray for you unceasingly, and I have been with those prayer requests. But please know, I can't carry it all. And I'm going to need some people.
Amen.
I'm going to need people to help carry the burden of other people. And we're going to be doing that. We're going to be starting that. Because that was a huge mistake that I made. And I think that was Moses. He kind of looked out and said, gosh, I've got to make sure that everyone here is happy. Have you ever tried to live your life that way? Like, I want to make everyone happy. You can't. Which is why I purposely try to anger some of you. So that you leave me alone. Just kidding. I don't actually do that. If you're sitting around trying to please everyone, you're going to get burned out, stretched thin real fast. And Moses is figuring this out. Saying, I can't care for all of you. One man can't. I think in a general sense, he looked down at the people and said, I really love all these people and I will do it. Remember, this was the same guy who prayed, Lord, I love these people so much, set them free. And if you need to, strike me dead. The same thing happened that Paul said later on in his epistles. He wrote a thing saying, if I could die so that the entire Jewish race could be saved, I would do it. That's how much he loved them. And that's how much Moses loved these people. But he realized that the burden started becoming a little bit too much. So he's whining and complaining. Now, this is an interesting whining and complaining. Because how does God respond to this? With punishment or with a solution? Here he's going to do a solution. Yeah. Verse 12, did I conceive all these people? Did I give them birth? Why do you tell me to carry them in my arms as a nurse carries an infant to the land you promised on oath to their forefathers? Where can I get meat for all these people? They keep wailing to me, give us meat to eat. I cannot carry all these people by myself. The burden is too heavy for me. If this is how you are going to treat me, put me to death right now. If I have found favor in your eyes, and do not let me face my own ruin. So he's burnt out. And let me tell you, burning out is never helpful. Heather and I have always had a saying. I think Heather was the one that came up with the saying, bow out before you burn out. If you're doing stuff for God in a particular location and you're getting to the point where you're starting to dread it, hate it, stay away from it, leave it. And I say the same to anyone for anything future here with this new congregation that's about to get started. That if you start volunteering and you're like, oh my gosh, I'm really excited, this is great, and then 6 months or 6 weeks or 6 days later, you're like, I need to take a break. I will not be the one that stands there and says, no, you really need to do this. Okay? You need to step away so that you can find that connection back with God so that you don't get bitterness. And bitterness in the Bible is likened to a root. But all it needs to do is get a little bit of hold in there and starts to grow up. So, yeah.
Almost like a bad apple.
Exactly, like a bad apple or a bad weed. Yeah. So you want to make sure that you don't ever end up getting burned out. Moses is getting burned out. He had gotten help from his father-in-law before, but it wasn't working well enough. So God comes up with a plan. The Lord said to Moses, bring me 70 of Israel's elders who are known to you as leaders and officials among the people. Have them come to the tent of meeting that they may stand there with you. I will come down and speak with you there, and I will take of the spirit that is on you and put the spirit on them. They will help you carry the burden of the people so that you will not have to carry it alone. I'm going to need, I could probably use about 70 people. I think that'd be cool. You're like, wait a second. But Moses had like over 1 million people and he only had 70 elders and you want something like that? Well, I'm not Moses, so I'm not that good. I need more help. And there's lots of ways you can do this, especially in this specific aspect. As I've talked about before, board of directors, it's going to be a more spiritually minded concept. You're there to support, you're there to pray, you're there to build up. I'm also going to establish a board of caregiving where people will be kind of put under other people's care so that something happens in your life, someone is there that you know that is not me. I'll care for you, don't worry about it. I'll still pray for you, I'll still write notes, I'll still make sure you know how much I care about you. But the better connection is if you know that other people are caring. I remember a while back, I didn't ask permission to tell the story, so I'll keep the person's name private. But a while back, I remember someone ended up in the hospital. And I didn't find out about it for like 3 weeks. And afterwards, I came to the person, I said, like, you didn't even like call me. Like, you know, what's up with that? I could have come, you know, I could have prayed for you, I could have come over. And she looked at me, she says, no, I was fine. People from the church knew about it, and they came, and they cared for me, and they prayed for me, and everything was great. And it was amazing because I stood back and said, that's the body taking care of the body. And that's an absolutely wonderful thing. We need people like that. If that's something that you want to be a part of, please let me know. And then the third group that I'm going to be establishing, I mentioned before, is a prayer group. So if that is something that you have a passion for, that you are wired for, right? If you don't sit there and go, yeah, when I sit down to pray, it's about 15 seconds and then I'm done, but you're like, I want to pray, and it ends up being 3 hours later, you're still doing it. This is one of those things that if you have five free minutes in your life, what do? If you're like, if I have 5 free minutes, I'm going to pray for someone else, then I need you to be a part of that. Through all this, you start building up and start supporting, because there's going to be a lot of care that's going to be needed to be given to people. That's going to be huge. And so we're going to need to see that. Jesus never walked alone, right? He had 12 guys. Not the brightest bulbs in the pack, but 12 guys that were there as a support. Someone he could talk to, someone he could share. So if Jesus had 12 people that he could lean on and talk to, then I think we would need the same thing as well here. So some of you have been saying, well, where do I plug in? Where do I fit in? If any of those three sound like something that you could be a part of, boy, let me tell you, I could really use you. Because I don't think I'll be able to carry this burden alone. But yeah, please know I love all of you. I think you guys are all amazing. Most of you. There's a couple of you I don't like. If you don't know who you are, it might be. I'm just kidding. Gosh. And I'm so thankful because I'm not going to get a nasty note about that. It's such so refreshing. I am going to get a nasty note. The police will make sure of it. Yeah.
As long as you don't talk about cats, you won't get a note.
Oh, yeah. Oh, man. You are. Yeah. Don't worry, that's going to come a couple times. I'm sure I'm going to take a pot shot or two. So. I'll take the nasty notes over that. So, I love all of you, but I hate all of your cats. So God sets it up that Any sort of leader should never be alone. And please understand that this is in every other case too, right? If you are a Lone Ranger leader, you will get burned out super quick. You need people around you, people who are honest with you, people who can speak truth to you, people who are there to support you and help you, people to share the burden with. That's for moms, for dads, if you're going into college, if you are leading your band program, if you are head trombonist. And there's so many different ways that you are the leader. Don't ever do it on your own. Make sure that you have some support. And I'll be doing the same thing. Right? Verse 18. Tell the people, consecrate yourselves in preparation for tomorrow when you will eat meat. Isn't that amazing? They whine about meat and God says, I'll give you some meat. May not be the best way, but that's okay. The Lord heard you when you wailed, if only we had meat to eat, we were better off in Egypt. Now the Lord will give you meat, and now you will eat it. You will not eat it for just one day or 2 days or 5, 10, or 20, but for a whole month until it comes out of your nostrils and you loathe it. Do we have any people here that like work at Starbucks or food places? Yeah, you don't work at Starbucks. You're there a lot. Does anyone ever work in an industry that people like? I've always been curious how I would do at the Krispy Kreme donuts. Did you work at a donut shop? Oh, so there we go. So, years ago. So when you worked at the donut shop, did you eat a lot of donuts?
No, I hated them.
You hated them. Why?
Because I ate too many.
Because you ate too many. Like you got there and you're like, yes, free donuts, and soon they started coming out of your nostrils, and you started to loathe that. I would love to do this with my kids. I have been tempted, Josh, because, Jen, what would you want to eat for a meal? Like, just if, your favorite meal.
I don't know. It's hamburgers, pancakes,
and
chocolate.
Let's do pancakes. Or all of them together. Hamburgers, pancakes, and chocolate.
You'll make a hamburger with pancakes.
Now, what would happen if I fed you pancakes for a whole day? Would you like that? Yes, you would. How about 2 days? 3 days? Yeah, there comes a point when you start hating this stuff. God's going to tell them, you want meat? I'll give you meat, and it's not going to be pretty. You're going to loathe it. And the reason why is, the reason because you've rejected the Lord who is among you and have wailed before him saying, why did we ever leave Egypt? Again, that's what complaining is. Complaining is just complaining to God. That's really all it is. If you don't like your situation, what you're telling God is, God, you're not doing a very good job. I could lead my life better than you can lead it. So please stop ruining my life. Dangerous words to say. Be careful what you wish for. Yeah, and that's what they wanted me, so God's going to give. Verse 21. But Moses said, here I am among 600,000 men on foot, and there's a whole bunch of others, so that's why we always say, you know, a million, million and a half people. And you say, I will give them meat to eat for a whole month. Would they have enough if flocks and herds were slaughtered for them? Would they have enough if all of the fish in the sea were caught for them? So this is very reminiscent of another instance in the New Testament. Feeding of the 5,000. He says, well, why don't you feed them? And they're like, well, if we had a whole month's wages, we couldn't feed all these people. And that was kind of the same thing. There's a lot of these overtones that show up then in the New Testament. He's like, we don't have enough cows here. Like, I thought you wanted us to bring our cattle into the promised land so we could grow herds. But if we killed all the cows and fished out all the fish in the sea, would that be enough food to be able to feed us? Probably not. Probably not. And the Lord answered Moses, is the Lord's arm too short? That's a good question, isn't it? Is the Lord's arm too short? Is God a wuss? Does God not have power? Is God unable to look at your situation and go, wow, I would really like to help them, but I just don't have the power to pull it off? God has power. Question is not can he do it, but will he do it? Will he actually intervene? And he's already made them the promise. He already told them, look, you guys are going to eat meat, and you're going to eat meat for a whole month. So this was already a promise that God made. So God's on the hook. God's going to have to figure it out. So Moses went out and told the people what the Lord had said. He brought together 70 of their elders and had them stand around the tent. Then he came down in the cloud and spoke with them. He took of the spirit that was on him and put the spirit on the 70 elders. When the spirit rested on them, they prophesied, but they did not do so again. God allowed them to do something incredible in such a way that it was demonstrative for everyone around to know that this is what was happening. God's spirit rested on those people. The only issue is there's a problem. There were not 70 people that were standing there. Only 68 of the 70 showed up to that event. That's what we learn about here in the next thing. However, two men whose names were Eldad and Medad had remained in the camp. They were listed among the elders but did not go out to the tent. Why didn't they go out to the tent?
Lazy.
They're lazy. Most men are, right? You know, no. I wish we knew the answer. We don't. Yes, Michael.
They were afraid.
You think they might have been afraid? It could be. Could be. Eldad and Edad, or Edab and, Eldad and Medad. They stayed behind and were not too sure why they were there. But they were listed among the elders. They didn't go out to the tent. Yet the Spirit also rested on them, and they prophesied in the camp. So now that poses an interesting issue. Because typically, for us, we like... Who here likes to figure out God? I personally spend a lot of my time trying to figure out what He's going to do. I think it's fascinating, especially once I can predict God's patterns, and I'll be able to be in really good shape because I'm going to know what God's going to do next. And then right when I figure it out, that's when He says, yeah, because that's what I would do if I were God. If I were God and someone's like, oh, I know what God's going to do, I would do just this is what's happening. This group gathers, these 68 gather. The people were watching the Spirit move among them. Two guys were in the camp, and they started prophesying. Now, what would you do if you were witnessing this and watched the two guys who did not show up because they're lazy or because they're scared or for whatever reason, and you didn't, and you saw them prophesying, but they weren't a part of the group? You'd want to stop them, right? You'd want to say, how dare you? You want to say, you're not part of our group. Because I don't know about you. This upcoming church is going to be the best church. And if you don't come to this church, you're going to an inferior church. That's what we like to say. We like to get our little group together. And we say, this is where everything is happening at. Is that the truth, though? Yeah. Same thing happened later on, right? In the New Testament. Some people see some guys when they're casting out demons. And... they're like, hey, Jesus, guess what? We saw some guys and they were casting out demons in your name, but we told them that they weren't a part of our little group, so we told them to stop. Isn't that great? Like, hey, we saw some friendly people helping out the homeless, but they're not part of our group, so we told them to knock it off. Hey, we saw some people and they were helping out a little old lady walking across the street, but because they weren't part of our little group, we told them, that's really dumb, you shouldn't do that. You can only do that if you're part of our group. Yes, exactly, Josh, that's right. Wiser words have not been spoken. That's just stupid. But that's what happens here. Verse 27, a young man ran and told Moses, tattles on him, Eldad and Medad are prophesying in the camp. Oh my gosh. Joshua, son of Nun. Yes, our first introduction to this young man named Joshua. Not you, because you're son of Mark, not son of... Oh, you actually have a question? I'll talk to you about that later, kiddo. Joshua speaks up, who has been Moses' aide since youth. So we learn a little bit about this guy named Joshua. A book gets written about him later on. He becomes a very important figure in the Old Testament narrative. He says, Moses, my Lord, stop them. But Moses replied, are you jealous for my sake? I wish that all the Lord's people were prophets and that the Lord would put His Spirit on them. Then Moses and the elders of Israel returned to the camp. In the Chronicles of Narnia, a book series written by a guy named C.S. Lewis, in the seventh book, there's this whole discussion about Aslan, who is the god figure that is there. And one of the things that they always talk about him is that he is not a tame lion, that he's wild, he's unpredictable. And I tell you, this is a great thing for me because every time I look at my life, I go, that's really not what I had planned for it at all. I had some really good plans, and God decided to change all those plans. Because every time you think you got God figured out, he's going to do something a little bit different in your life. And understand this, the Spirit of the Lord does not rest upon me only. That's huge. The Spirit of the Lord rests upon all of you. I would wish that all of you would prophesy, would speak God's words, would speak words of encouragement by His Spirit and by His power, would pray, would be incredible in acts of service. I, like Moses, would say the same thing. There's going to be others that maybe aren't a part of our group, but let me tell you, they might have some really good things to say. Sometimes God brings unexpected messages from people who I would never, ever expect them to come from. So I wish that the same thing for you. That God's Spirit would reside in you, upon you, work through you, endow you, encourage you, overtake you, so that you would be able to do incredible things, not to draw attention to yourself, but to draw attention to the one that's most important, and that's Jesus Christ. Amy.
Kind of along those lines, the footnote for why the two men didn't show up seems to indicate that perhaps that one of them was ceremonially unclean, or that they were being taken prison, or a prisoner of some sort. And if you think about what you just said, Pastor, like, well, do we want somebody who's been in prison to be talking about Jesus?
Oh,
or do we want somebody who's ceremonially unclean and just come into the kingdom and they still kind of have their death clothes on to be prophesying and talking about how great Jesus is when they're still...
No. Yeah, I don't know where they picked up that someone was ceremonially unclean. If that
It has 1 Samuel 20, 26, and Jeremiah 36, 5 as kind of the footnotes on it.
Yeah, I don't think it specifically mentions it, but that would be a reason that maybe when the gathering was happening, they thought found themselves ceremonially unclean, or if they're. But yeah, it brings up a very important point if that's the case. Again, I hear that all the time from people. Hey, I think that you would do great doing this. No, you don't want me. If you knew my past, you would think you would. No, you don't want me. Or I don't have the skills to do that. Or I don't look like everyone else. Or I don't act like everyone else. Or I don't dress like everyone else. Or I've got a past. Go through the Bible and find out the backgrounds of all of the great people, and you will find out that God regularly uses everyone. And if you need any more proof, just look at me. He's using me, for heaven's sake. I mean, that's the most laughable thing in the world. I mean, I'm just a guy, and God uses me, which means that He can do the same with you. And it doesn't matter if you're inside the camp or outside the camp, or maybe you're ceremonially unclean, or maybe you don't think you got the chops, or maybe you're like Moses and you're afraid that you can't speak very well, or maybe you feel like you're Jeremiah and you're a little too young. No, God can use you. And He will use you. However, as much as you will allow it, it's pretty incredible. So yeah, that's an interesting point. I'd be very curious if that was the actual reasons why they're out. But yeah, this is how God works. God is not neat and clean. God is a God of order, don't get me wrong. And He has things done in order. But that doesn't mean that everything goes the exact way that we think. And God also changes in the fact of how He reaches and ministers to people. If you watch as things change from the Old Testament to the New Testament, you see God's tactics are often very flexible in order to reach people. And we should have that same attitude and flexibility. Yeah.
Just like in the you bring up the subject. In the New Testament with Mary.
Oh, the New Testament with Mary?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. Used a girl, an unwed, preteen girl to house God in the flesh. That's pretty incredible. Yeah. All right, let's get to the quail story. So again, I pray God's Spirit upon all of you. I really do. And I pray for more ministers, more leaders, more people who are willing to stand up and be counted. All right, so now a wind went out from the Lord and drove quail in from the sea. If I were the people, it'd be like, because remember, did they have quail before? Yeah, they had quail, but that's why this is such a strange little story. We've already done the manna thing and then the quail thing, but God is like, you know what, I'm going to give it to you again. You're going to have quail once again. Drove them in from the sea. It brought them down all around the camp to about 3 feet above the ground as far as a day's walk in any direction. Wow, something has gone afoul here. No? Thank you, DJ. Slow clap. Slow clap's always worth it. Now, do you have a text note on brought them down about 3 feet above the ground? What do you have as notes there?
Or they flew.
So the question is, are they being driven or are they flying there? This could possibly be a huge, massive bird migration. You can explain this miracle naturally, but you'll still be stuck with the problem of the timing of it and then the sheer quantity. But Hebrew, there's a problem with it about the whole 3 feet above the ground issue, because there's another way to translate it, that they were piled up 3 feet high. Now that is a lot of Kentucky Fried Chicken. Yeah. That would be really awesome. So it's either 3 feet high, you're trying to wade through all these birds that are just there. So, which makes it really easy, because do you have to go out and catch the birds? Man, they're just right there. Just reach out and grab a bird, wring its neck, and boom. You know, dump it in a fryer, you're ready to go. Little dipping sauces, little mojo potatoes, you're going to be really enjoying life. The other option is they could have been just 3 feet off the ground. That this wind, and this is a phenomenon that has actually happened in the past, where droves will come in, and because the wind is blowing the way it is, they can't sustain high altitudes. They end up flying 3 feet above the ground, which would be awesome because, I don't know about you, I would just be taking my little baseball bat, right? And I just, because anyone could catch these puppies, right? No, there's a reason why, because it actually says it a little bit later on. Yeah, look at verse 32. All day, all that day and night and all the next day, the people went out and gathered quail. No one gathered less than 10 homers. So, oh man, I set that one up. No? I try. That's why you come here for the jokes, people. So these people, now imagine, how much is 10 homers? Do you have a text note on 10 homers? 60 bushels, which is about 2.2 kiloliters.
3/4 tons or 1.6 metric tons.
Yeah, so now imagine every person gathered 10 homers and there's 1.5 million people. Man, that is a lot of bird. And that's pretty awesome that God has sent them all of that stuff. So they spread them all out around the camp. So while the meat was still between their teeth and before it could be consumed, the anger of the Lord burned against the people, and he struck them with a severe plague. What does that mean? Sometimes we get what we want, and it's not really what's best for us. Have you ever complained about something and wanted it so badly, and then you realized it really wasn't that big of a deal? Oh, yeah, I'm going to tell the Jacob story here in just a moment. Yeah. Is that okay, Jake? Can I tell the story? I didn't ask permission, but I'm asking now. Good. Alex.
Whenever I come across that pastor, I always thought that they were just, they didn't stop to thank the Lord. They just kind of, you know, they started with an unthankful attitude. And as they were eating, they continued. Nothing changed.
Yeah, like if you sit there, like, have you ever watched a kid whine and complain and complain and complain and complain and complain about something and then you give it to them? Are they usually grateful?
No.
No, they're usually feeling like they're entitled, right?
Yeah.
So I'm going to tell a story. Oh, Jacob got up and left. I love you, Jacob. So Jacob, we're at Disneyland. This was years ago. And Jacob came across, I don't even know anything about it. Club Penguin. It's a video game. Club Penguin. Yeah. And we're sitting there. Oh, do you know this? Because I know nothing about it. Because we're walking by and Jacob says, oh, I want this game. And I'm like, what is this game? I don't know, Dad, but this is a great game. You got to get this. I'm like, but Jake, what do you even know? Oh, I know all about it, Dad. I really want it. And
And if you give it to me, I will never ask for anything ever again in my entire life. And you will make me the happiest person if you give me this video game.
Well, of course, then, I'm inclined to say yes, right?
So actually, it turned out that we did say yes. He was crying. Like, he was devastated because we might not get him this Club Penguin thing. So we bought it for him. And he played it for exactly 1 hour and then said, this is a stupid game. And then put it away.
But isn't that how we often operate? I will be happy if only God will bring me my spouse. Oh, really? You think that getting married then is going to solve all your problems and everything's going to be hunky-dory? Yeah, there's going to be a few more problems in your life. Yeah. If only I could get into the right college. If only I had the right job. If only I had the right size house. If only I had all these things, then I would be happy. If you say that, I guarantee you, you will never be happy. Ever. The better thing to do is look around at your situation, your circumstances, and say, thank you for what you've given me. And when we start with an attitude of thankfulness to begin with, then we go, wow, look at what he does provide. Because I tell you, when my eyes get laser focused on something that I think is going to ultimately make me happy, I find out that it's never satisfying. So that Jacob doesn't feel alone, I'll tell you a story. When I was younger, I really wanted a pair of Reeboks. My mom bought me Kmart shoes. I used to wear Kmart shoes. That was all I could. But then I was like, Mom, I want a pair of Reeboks. But Reeboks were like $100. And my mom's like, you do not need a $100 pair of shoes. You are growing at an extraordinary rate, and you're just going to outgrow them, and there's no way I'm going to spend that. And I go, please, it will make me so happy. And I finally did. I remember the day when I did it with my own money. I cut all the lawns. I did all these chores. I did all these extra jobs for other people. I saved up enough money, and I finally got my pair of Reeboks. And guess how happy it made me? It made me happy for about a week. Because you know what I started thinking of after I got that? If only I had something else, then I would be really happy. And I know the same thing also for anything spiritual. If only I had this gifting from God. If only I was able to serve in this capacity. If only I could do this. Then I would be happy. You won't. You might be happy for about a week. And then you're not going to be happy anymore. Learning how to be thankful in the situation you're at now is the best lesson any one of us can actually learn. So they're eating it. They're eating their 10 homers. Knocking it out of the park. And God dang it. It's in the book of Psalms. It actually says that the people that God affected the most were the strong young men. Why the strong young men? We don't know exactly, but I could take a guess. They were probably whining the most. Strong young men just wanting some meat, thinking that that will heal them, that that will make them better. I think also the strong young men, because sometimes we rely on our own strength and our own power, and God has an uncanny way of always reminding us that it is not by our own power, our own might, but it's only by His Spirit.
The most dangerous animal in the world is an 18 to 25-year-old man.
The most dangerous animal in the world is the 18 to 25-year-old man, Brandon. Don't leave that. Like 1920, something like that. You are a dangerous guy. Yeah, I think this was God's way of making sure that they weren't on the road driving, because we know how much they get into accidents. So they had the severe plague. Verse 34, therefore the place was named Kibroth Hattaava, because there they buried the people who had craved other food. From Kibroth Hattaava, the people traveled to Hazeroth and stayed there. What are you whining about in life today? Are you whining that you want a little baby girl? I was just seeing if she was listening. That's all. Boy, she perked right on up there. She's like, what? Are you talking about me? I know it's not fair. I think fire shall consume me, and I will. Yeah, I'll be knocked down by
five girls now.
Yeah. Now I've gone on record that if I have 12 granddaughters, I'll be fine with that.
because I can hang with that. But yeah, what is it that's going to make you happy in life? Is it just getting into the right school, having the right friends, driving the right car, having the right job, having the right amount of money? Is that what's going to make you happy? Best thing to do is stop and say, first and foremost, I've been given the greatest gift of all, the gift of eternal life, because of Jesus, who has rescued me, not from slavery in Egypt, not from a hard life where I'm beaten constantly, but he saved me from the worst possible thing, and that's eternal damnation. And he has given me the option, the opportunity, the faith to believe. And because of that, whatever happens here on life is going to become meaningless compared to the joys we're going to have in heaven. It's going to be greater than anything we could ever imagine. We will never ever whine about melons or leeks or cucumbers, because there we will have the presence of God. And perhaps maybe today would be a great day to start practicing that. Let's pray. Lord, forgive us for when we've whined. I know I'm pretty good at it. I sometimes think that if only I had this, then I'd be happy, and I just know that it's not true. Because if I have you, I have everything. Forgive us, Lord, when we have tried to capture you and place you in a box and figure you out so well, because we know that your spirit roams quite freely among your people. And your spirit lands and rests upon people sometimes outside of our camp. Forgive us when we've ever tried to stop and prevent your work from happening. Instead, help us to be thankful how you move in this world, in our life, and that you've chosen to have your spirit rest upon us, your people. Forgive us, Lord, thankful hearts that are focused on you and upon your grace and your forgiveness. Thank you in Jesus' name. Amen. Awesome. Numbers chapter 12. Next week, we're going to all talk about what happens if you oppose your leader. You will be struck with a leprosy. Oh, it's going to be a great sermon, I promise you.